any kind of money gives you. Welcome to Cinema Crespo Disso. This is our first of hopefully many, many episodes. I'm your host, Christopher Crespo, film critic extraordinaire, writer, gun for hire. Sitting across from me is co-host, helper outer, the Andy Richter to my Conan, Drew Betteridge. Drew, how's it going?
How's it going, Chris?
Doing good, dude. Doing good. Welcome to the show. Let me explain to everyone what's going on here. This is a cinema podcast related type thing. It's all about movies, right?
And other things.
And other things. Because, you know, movies are about life, and life is full of things, so shit happens. I did this for a while on SBK Live on the radio. We had a whole rhythm going. I'm taking a lot of that, using it here. So if you're a fan of that show, welcome. You'll recognize a lot of this. But we're going to be changing some things up. So, and if you're new to all of this, welcome anyway. Appreciate you tuning in.
It's okay, don't feel bad. I'm new to all of this as well.
Drew's new to this. He's a very, very good friend of mine. One of my best friends. Never listened to a single edition
That's a lie. I listened to the last one, but that's because one. I felt obligated.
He did. Well, good job. And also, tell the people, Drew, your wealth of experience in talk radio.
Well, my wealth of experience in talk radio has been what you've been listening to. This is my experience. The last 5 seconds were my first 5 seconds. And
actually a minute 36.
Well, there we go. I have a minute and 36 seconds and counting of radio experience.
All right. And tell people about your film critic background.
My film critic background, well, I mean, besides seeing movies with you, Mr. Crespo,
right,
for the last 8 years or so,
right.
That's pretty much all the film critic experience I have as well.
Just sitting around talking about movies.
Sitting around talking about movies with you and all of our other friends.
Yeah, so welcome to the party, dude.
I'm here. It's going to be a good one.
I think it's going to work out. It's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Each show is going to have a little bit of a format. We're going to talk about what's the box office. We're going to review the numbers. We'll review films that we've seen in that period. Then we will go on and talk about the new movies on DVD, and then we will enter, after that we will go into the Crespo Dome, where anything can happen. Two men enter.
No men leave.
Actually, no, we'll both leave. I'm not looking to get hurt here, just going to have some fun. But before all of that, we're going to start with the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. Every week I'm going to have a new Pick of the Week for the Netflix. I'm not necessarily, this isn't a commercial for Netflix, it is free advertisement for them. Maybe
they should pay us a little bit.
Maybe they should be giving me some money for all this.
I mean, we'll have our marketing director look into it.
All right. Yes. Who's our marketing director again?
We're working on that.
We're working on that. If you'd like to be a marketing director for Cinema Crespo Disso, you can email us at cinemacrespodisso@gmail.com. Well, they're not paying me right now, so I'm not necessarily endorsing the product, but I love it. It's great. I've been using it for a while. I guess that's an endorsement right there.
Yeah.
Damn it.
For not endorsing a product, you're doing a pretty good job of endorsing a product.
Damn it. Well, I like the Netflix. They have a great selection. Newer films, not so much because that's expensive, but they have a lot of older films, cheap because that's cheaper to have, indie films, foreign films. So I wade through that stuff, and I picked the best ones. This week, I got a doozy. And I know you've seen it, Drew. Might have been a while, but I know you've seen it. This one is Miller's Crossing, the Coen brothers, Miller's Crossing.
It's quite a good movie. It being one of the Coens, I guess, older movies, it doesn't... When you think of the Coen brothers,
yeah,
you tend to think something maybe a little light, per se.
Like a Big Lebowski?
Yeah, like a Big Lebowski, but Miller's Crossing is not light.
No. I mean, it has its humor. It always has
it's
Coen
it's
humor.
Dark humor, though.
It's some of their darker humor. It's a movie about a guy. It's a Prohibition era film. Two gangs in one town, and there's one dude who works for one gang. That's Gabriel Byrne's character, a guy who doesn't talk at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to keep the peace between the two gangs. He's the guy that quote knows all the angles, and then this other guy. He's like, don't give me the hi-hat. You know, there's, I don't know, it's a ridiculous movie. The Coen Brothers movie, so the language is crazy. It's got some wild violence, you know, some action.
Oh, there is a whole lot of action.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Over the top.
The coat checking scene, if I'm not mistaken.
Which one?
Oh, they're going in. They pay off the coat girl, I guess.
Yeah.
For like just like to walk away and leave or whatever.
Yes.
And then they're waiting when the guys come back. Who they have their coats, and because their guns are in their coats, they have their guns too. And then they just slaughter them all, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not remembering that.
I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking of a different movie, but I think it might be Miller's Crossing.
It's possible. I haven't watched it in a little while, but it's on there. My original choice for Netflix pick of the week was removed. I had picked a while ago. I had a bag of picks, and
it was taken away.
They do that. They put them up. They take them down.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we'll watch Miller's Crossing. See if that scene's in there. If it is, let us know.
I might be right about that. Maybe not.
There's a lot of crazy stuff in that movie. It's not from 1990, so it's kind of old, but I think it holds up really well.
Oh, definitely holds up.
It's 114 minutes long, so, you know, it's not that long. And it's rated R, so, you know, it's good for the whole family. Go ahead and get grandma, get the kids, sit around, enjoy it. And that's your Netflix pick of the week. So now let's talk about the box office for this weekend. Drew, why don't you go ahead and tell us what's the number 5 movie for the weekend?
The number 5 movie for the weekend is Les Miserables. It made $10.1 million for a grand total of $119.2 million. Nice. And it was made with only $61 million, so it looks like they've already doubled their money.
Yeah, they're doing good, and that also made another $119 million in international markets, so that puts that $238 worldwide.
Okay, wow, they made quite a bit of money on that.
Doing pretty good. Did you get any chance you saw Les Mis?
Yeah, I didn't say I kind of feel bad about saying that I wanted to, just because I despise musicals,
right.
Like, to the core.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm a fan of Hugh Jackman, and I know he's a song and dance guy to begin with.
Yes, he is.
So I figured he would probably really shine in this movie.
Right.
That's kind of why I wanted to see it. That, and I'm a sucker for anything Anne Hathaway's in as well.
True. Yeah, yeah. She's good. People are raving about Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
I saw it on Christmas Day with the family.
With the fans?
Yeah, yeah. And it was good. I enjoyed it. You know, it's a little long.
What did the fams think?
Mom loved it.
Of course.
Dad liked it, I think, which, you know, for a musical, that's a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
I think my brother liked it. I think it went over pretty well with everyone. Yeah, but mom liked it. And I had a lot of people. I remember, actually, there was one woman in the theater who had a Les Mis shirt.
Oh, what, one of the old ones?
I don't remember. It was just had the logo of the play, like the girl, the young girl,
the one that you see on the book covers
yeah,
always.
Yeah, young Cosette.
That one, yeah.
I was like, you know, she's that lady. She's the one that she wore the shirt of the band she's gonna go see.
You never wear the shirt. Never wear the shirt. Like, if you're going to the show, you cannot wear the shirt of the band you're going to see.
I don't wear my Herzog shirts. The Herzog movies.
No. Oh man.
That'd be weird.
The Herzog shirt is awesome.
Thank you very much. Well, thanks to my mom. She's the one that got it for me. All right, yeah. Well, Les Mis, you know, it's pretty good. Making a lot of money, so Les Mis 2. Watch out. That might be coming. Go ahead. Give us the number 4 movie.
The number 4 movie of the week was Django Unchained. It made $11.1 million for a grand total of $125.4 million, and it only cost him $100 million to make.
Nice.
So, once again, making someone not as much as Les Mis, but still a decent chunk of change.
Well, it hasn't really opened up in foreign markets yet, but Inglourious Basterds made $120 million total, and made like another $200 million internationally.
Worldwide. So hopefully it'll make a good amount of money.
It'll probably make like $250, $300 internationally, so it'll make a lot. I mean, this is his highest grossing film yet at $125 million.
Well, it's a good one.
It's
fantastic.
I think it's one of his best.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely enjoyed it. So, you know, his highest grossing film, he only has 3 left in him, he says. He's 50 years old, he's retiring at 60.
Quoted on that?
Yeah, he's been going around saying that.
Interesting.
That would give him 10 films total. And he likes that number. He likes saying
nice and round.
A nice round 10 films.
Is that maybe so we can have a nice round percentage of failures and successes?
Well, he only sees Death Proof as being his one quote failure. That's the one he feels like it didn't really work out too well.
Okay.
He's happy with all his other movies.
I can see that.
Yeah, so he would have to kind of really crap out three stinkers.
Well, you never know these days.
You do never know, but I think between this and Glorious Bastards, he's pretty much making, he's made his best movie so far. He's at the height of his powers.
You are correct on that.
That's good for $125 million. It'll probably get to like at this point, it's been out for like 4 or 5 weeks. So it'll probably get to like $160 million or so.
Well, it says it's week number three.
Week number three, really?
Yes.
All right, so maybe 160, 170, plus another 250. Oh, yeah, that's plenty of change. And also budget, $100 million. That's Tarantino's highest budget to date, too. Like the Kill Bill movies, $30 million each. Even Inglourious Basterds was only $70 million. So it's its first $100 million epic, so to speak. Money well spent, I'd say. Number three movie, give it to us.
Number three movie this week was Gangster Squad. The weekend gross of $16.7 million. Total gross is $16.7 million, and budget is not listed.
I had to go online and look for that one. I found a quoted budget at $75
million. Okay,
so
I'm down for that.
So if it's $75 million, it kind of looked like a $75 million movie.
Uh-huh.
It had the production value going for it. A lot of old cars, old hats, old ties.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely got a couple weeks to go before it makes its money back.
This is its first week, so.
Mm-hmm.
They were probably hoping for more like $20, $25 million. And then remember, this was supposed to come out September of last year.
Yeah, but then
that thing happened in Colorado.
And that whole scene was totally cut, by the way.
Yep, the scene that was in all the trailers. That looked pretty good.
I was really looking forward to that scene.
But you can't rip out a movie if you want.
I know. Yeah. It's very sensitive material.
Yeah. So they replaced it with that Chinatown scene. Apparently that's the...
That was the replacement?
Apparently that's the replacement scene, the Chinatown scene. Which was okay. It was a little predictable. Mostly because of what happened in the trailer. They gave away a lot of that stuff in the trailer.
Yeah, they did.
Sons of bitches.
Well,
what you think of the movie? We went and saw the movie the other day.
I thought it was great. I thought Ryan Gosling was talking a little funny in the beginning.
He was talking like this the whole time.
Yeah, and I don't... After a while, I either got used to it or I just didn't care anymore.
Right. I think I just got used to it.
At a certain point in time, I forgot that he was talking in weird voice.
I had the same reaction. Like, okay, so Gosling is going with this choice for this whole movie.
Exactly, yeah.
He's like, hey, Josh Brolin, how's it going? You got to die of something. Yeah, it's weird. It's kind of weird. You don't got to talk with that high pitch of a voice, buddy. But
the plot was a little predictable, but then again, like you said, they gave away most everything in the trailer
They did. They gave away a lot in the trailer. It was easy to put things together as I was watching the movie.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed the costume design, personally. Everything was...
The production design.
Pretty spot on.
Some of
those ties were so god-awfully ugly, I really wish I had one.
Like, you would only wear stuff like that in the... Yeah. What was it, 49 was set in, 1949? In the 40s. Look like a fun Art Deco type period to live in, post-war America.
Yeah, definitely.
Look pretty cool. Pretty classy.
It was quite violent, which I was a fan of.
It is a very violent movie. It is rated R.
Yeah.
Definitely earns it.
I'm always a big fan of the Tommy gun. Anytime you just kind of throw a drum full of ammunition on an automatic weapon, I think it's a pretty good thing.
A lot of Tommy gun violence.
Yeah.
A lot of Tommy gunning.
I'm a big fan of the Tommy guns. So.
There's a lot of Tommy gunning in Miller's Crossing.
Yes, there is.
There's a link there between those movies.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I thought Gangster Squad was good. I mean, it was enjoyable, a little predictable, but still overall, I like the design of it. I like the action.
It was only an hour and 50 minutes, which almost seemed a little short. Almost seemed like maybe you could have given him some a little bit of extra rope.
Maybe.
To see what could have happened.
Maybe, yeah. And then there was one thing that I found distracting, other than Ryan Gosling's voice. Was the digital camera that popped up. The way there's some weird camera moves every now and then that was obviously digital.
Oh, what, like when...
Like during the car chase scene when the camera's flying around from really high up
and
then it zooms in.
When Ryan Gosling was walking through...
Yeah, he's walking through the club all angry and then...
moving left and right. That was everything got all fuzzy.
Yeah, that was an odd choice. I always find it odd to go really obviously digital or CG with movies that take place in like the 40s and 50s, you know.
Yeah, it is.
I feel like if you're going to make a movie that takes place in that time period, you should also do
practical effects.
Yeah, you should do the effects that they would do in that time period, you know.
Agreed.
I mean, obviously with our standards today, but that's nitpicky stuff. Overall, I thought it was good. I'd say it's more of a Redbox rental, you know.
You know what? I would pay the $5 to see it in demand.
In demand, okay.
I think it would be in demand as opposed to Redbox.
All right. That's a good way to look at it. All right, there you go. So those are our recommendations on Gangster Squad. Go ahead and give us the number two movie.
Number two movie of the week is A Haunted House. The weekend gross of $18.8 million, and that's the total gross. Wow, the budget was only $2.5 million, so they're already in the money.
That's a bingo.
Really hardcore.
That's a lot of money for $2.5 million.
That's what I'm saying. And this is its first week too. So this is all just icing on the cake.
Right. It's a Wayne Brothers joint. That's what they do. They make movies on the cheap. They're smart.
Man.
They're business geniuses. They make movies on the cheap and they make money. That's why they keep getting to make movies. This goes all the way back to Scary Movie for them. And then they're so smart, they dumped off the Scary Movie franchise, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's actually a Scary Movie 5 coming out this year with Charlie Sheen and Lindsay Lohan in small parts, and it's totally, they're spoofing the same movie.
And they can still get away with putting out this movie as well.
Because
it's not called Scary Movie.
It's not them, because Scary Movie is now someone else. They sold it off. They're doing their own thing. I heard someone else say this, but it bears repeating. I don't know how they don't call this Paranormal Black Activity.
No, it is a great name. I was actually, if you didn't say it here in the next few seconds, I was going to be like, Chris, before we saw when we were on our way to see the movie, Gangster Squad yesterday, you called this something else, and I think you should repeat it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it should have been called.
It really should have been called Paranormal Black Activity.
It's a found footage comedy, which is, I do want to see this movie based on the fact that it's a found footage comedy, which has never been made.
Yeah.
Project X is the closest thing to a found footage comedy. That's a totally different deal.
That was more of like a found footage party
movie.
It's a party movie, with some humor in it.
So it's a different pacing.
You could call it a comedy, I guess, but it's definitely a party movie.
It had some fun moments in it. But it's a comedy, so that's a totally different thing. They're focusing on paranormal activity, so it should have been Paranormal Black Activity. It just seems so obvious. But anyway, I mean, 2.5 Haunted House 2 coming out next year. Maybe even this Halloween.
Because they've got the cash for it.
They can crank
that thing out real quick.
I mean, there's plenty of cheap horror films to make fun of, so there you go. All right, go ahead and give us the number one movie of the week, Andrew.
And the number one movie of the week was Zero Dark Thirty, with a weekend gross of $24 million. Total gross is $29.5 million.
All right.
And the budget was $40 million. So they're on their way to making their money back.
What does it say on total weeks out?
I don't know why. This is week 4 weeks.
4 weeks, because the platform release, it came out 4 weeks ago in New York and L.A.
Oh, everywhere else?
Yeah.
Oh, I hate it when they do that.
Yeah, it was originally going to come out in wide release in December, but they saw a whole bunch of movies were slated to come out. So they decided to pull back. They only put it in select theaters to get the awards consideration, which, you know, they got some nominations. We can talk about that later. But then they decided to do the wide release in January of 2013. So even though we got to see it this year, technically it's a 2012 film.
So it was basically like an Oscar move.
Yes, absolutely. Like, an Oscar move and a commercial move.
They're like, we want to make this movie into the Oscars, so we're going to kind of release it now and then everywhere else later.
It's for both, because if they release it in December, there was a lot of movies that came out in the middle of December, like 3-4 new movies a weekend.
Well, so they get the best of both worlds. They get to delay the wide release until economically viable,
right,
but still technically get in on the 2012 Oscar kick. And
right,
because it's such a great movie and it came out so late in the Oscar race,
mm-hmm,
I mean, it's fresh in everyone's mind. It's almost guaranteed to win something.
I mean, they even timed it. They released it the Friday after the Oscar nominations were announced. So it was, you know, people are like, oh, this is nominated for all this stuff. So let's go check it out. I got to see it. I know we planned on seeing it last night. Ironically, trying to set up the show got in the way of us going to see a movie yesterday.
Exactly.
You know,
and then I fell asleep.
It's been a little time consuming, but I got to see it this morning, and
what'd you think?
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I can definitely see
why.
definitely see why it's gotten the attention that it's gotten. It's very well made. It's long. It's like 2 hours and 37 minutes.
Does it feel like 2 hours and 37 minutes?
A little bit because it's a little arduous, I'll tell you.
Okay, how about that? Does it drag like The Hobbit?
No.
Okay, good.
No, it doesn't.
Because that movie,
there's no scene where a bunch of Saudi Arabians stop to sing a song about a mountain.
Awesome.
That doesn't. No.
Good.
Very good. No. It definitely moves. You know, and it's split up into essentially three sections. There's like 45 minutes or so of interrogation techniques and terrorist attacks and torture. And it's not, you know, it's tough to watch. It's framed like a thriller, like a CIA thriller, the whole film. But since it is based on true events, and it's always kind of just a harsh reminder of all the crazy shit that's happened since September 11th. Yeah. The movie starts, it says September 11th, 2001, and then it's just a black screen and then 90 seconds of emergency call
tapes.
Audio, the tapes. And it's mostly a lot of operatives talking to each other. Like the one I remember, some guy going, is this real world or is this a test? Or is this a drill? Yeah. And the guy responds, this is not a drill. And then,
so now, is that actual recording or did they do that for the movie?
I think most of it was actual recording.
There's one that
I hope it isn't, because it's a woman, like she's like, we're in the tower and there's smoke everywhere and I think, like, I'm burning up. I think we're going to die. And the operator's trying to console her. And then, like, it clicks off. And the operator's like, oh, my God. And that's the end of the audio montage. And that's the representation of that day. No visual representation. All audio. Then it jumps to 2 years later. But just that 60 seconds was that put me in such a weird spot.
Just hearing that audio, I mean, you don't even have to be there. We've been so inundated with the whole 9/11 thing.
Yeah, your brain fills with images.
It's almost worse for you just to hear it, because then you put your own images in there.
Yeah, you're imagining it. Yeah.
My imagination is a lot worse than whatever they're putting on that screen.
It was, for me, it was so hard to get through that when it came back to it said 2 years later, and it immediately cut to some dude beaten and half naked and strapped up and getting ready to be tortured in the middle of being tortured. I was like, oh, thank God, this is a little lighter. And this is, I can take this a little better, you know?
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. All the torture scenes are really harsh. And there's a weird controversy how some people who are, I guess, misreading the movie, or they're seeing what they want to see, they're claiming that this is a film that is pro-torture, because there's a lot of torture, and then some of it gets them answers that takes them down some roads. So it's almost like they say that it's endorsing it, but then there's other people that read it that say it's anti-torture because of the placement of events.
I haven't seen the film, so I can't comment, but I would assume that it's just probably just showing torture as it is.
It is. It's showing it objectively.
Torture, for the most part, like 85% is ineffective. I mean, there's statistics that prove that.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, those statistics around here, where are they?
But I don't have those statistics anywhere.
No statistics. There's
some sort of statistics somewhere, I'm sure.
We'll find them later.
Anyway.
We'll back that up.
But I mean, some torture does provide real information.
It does.
And
it can.
It just happens that information was gotten that way.
Yeah. It does. The movie is definitely more just like, here's a sequence of events.
This is what happened.
A lot of this didn't work. A lot of this got us in trouble. They mentioned, you know, Abu Ghraib and all that stuff, and how politically they had to shut down a detainee program and had to get their information elsewhere. But then even once they did that, that's when certain leads started opening up and they had to focus away from the detainee type stuff. So I don't know. It's just it just shows you what's going on, and then you take from it what you will. You know, I think it's really just a really good thriller when you boil it down in the end. The last section, the last like 30 minutes or so, is the SEAL Team 6 getting them together, showing them the awesome stealth helicopters,
and then
the raid itself, which takes like 20 minutes. It's like really intense. I'm going around the compound and it's super dark, and they do
sure
a lot of night vision.
Too.
A lot of it is quiet. It's like, you know, just walk around and you just hear like the Velcro and the guns and stuff. It's really, really well made. It's crazy that this is the same director that gave us Point Break and Strange Days and K-19, The Widowmaker.
Oh.
Those are some different movies, man. I mean, you know, Point Break is awesome because it's can't be fun.
Well, no, exactly. Point Break is awesome because it's so bad.
It makes it fantastic. It's a fantastic watch.
It is a great movie, but it is a horrible film.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I am an FBI agent. Everyone remembers that. It's ridiculous.
He gets so angry and then just lays down and shoots
the gun in the air.
It's
absurd.
I mean, they even poke fun at that in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah. He sees that as inspiration because it is good. Strange Days, it's kind of weird and not as good. K-19 put her in director jail for like 5-6 years before she came out with The Hurt Locker.
Which was awesome.
And now all of a sudden, she's like the person that did The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. She's going to have to stick to these type of military-type movies.
Well, I mean,
she does so well,
if
apparently.
If she does stick to these military-type movies and tells these great stories, then what? You know, keep it rolling.
Why not?
It's good stuff.
Why not, right? That's definitely the big surprise, I'd say, of the year. Or of the last few years. Catherine Bigelow emerging as one of our finer action directors.
Yeah, maybe she just had to divorce James Cameron and then she could
get that out of her system.
And then become a great movie maker.
Definitely get that out of her system. All right, so that's your box office of the weekend and our reviews of Gangster Squad and Zero Dark Thirty. To recap, Gangster Squad, I give it a red box rental. You give it a $5 on-demand rental.
Yeah, I give it on-demand.
I say Zero Dark Thirty. Go out and see it. You can even see it pay full price. It's worth it. It's definitely solid entertainment. Very, very interesting. It's not, you know, a laugh a minute, but I definitely enjoyed it. All right, so let's talk about the new movies of the weekend. Actually, also the DVDs. We got new DVDs coming out on Tuesday, and it's mostly a bunch of crap. There's
awesome.
There's Won't Back Down. That's a movie with Viola Davis and Maggie Gyllenhaal, and it's pretty much like an anti-charter school movie. And I'm only mentioning it because it got like when it came out independently, a lot of like teachers unions came out against it and got a lot of people up in arms, like in the education community. Very, very interesting in that regards. But otherwise, I hear it's not that hot of a film. To Rome with Love, the latest Woody Allen movie made in Europe. That's the one where a bunch of people, I think Jesse Eisenberg's in it. Alec Baldwin is in it.
I haven't seen a Woody Allen movie in a really long time.
Yeah, well, you know, he's done all these ones in Europe lately.
Yeah. Well, wait, actually...
Midnight in Paris, you saw that one.
You know what?
Yep.
That was actually pretty good.
I mean, he's good. He's been around for a while.
He can be good.
I think this one is more minor Woody.
Okay.
Which usually happens with filmmakers. They make something really good, well-regarded, and then they follow up with something that's a little lesser. Mm-hmm. That happens sometimes. The Possession... is the Jewish based horror film that came out recently with like a girl gets a box and then a bunch of bugs.
Oh my God, Rabbi, please help her.
Yeah, and the comedian is like, this is my alternate life. It's weird.
Man, yeah,
Jeffrey Dean Morgan, and Taken 2 comes out on DVD on Tuesday.
Missed that one too.
Did you? But you saw the first one.
Oh, I saw the first one.
Did you like it?
It was. I mean, it's Liam Neeson kicking ass around Europe. I mean, it was unknown again.
Right.
Or I'm sure Taken 2 next.
Yeah. the thing about Taken 2 is if you have seen the first one, then the second one has no surprises. You know Liam Neeson. You know his character will go as far as he has to go. So it's no surprise when that happens.
Yeah.
It's a different director, but it's still produced by Luc Besson. It's still a French production. It has a lot of the same hallmarks of like the Transporter movies and that type of shaky cam, hyper-edited action. Not that big of a fan of that kind of stuff. I thought Taken was okay. I thought people overreacted to it. And then this one, a lot of people hated on Taken 2. And I thought people were overreacting that way, too. It's a relatively okay film.
It's a legit action flick.
It's a movie with Liam Neeson doing badass things.
I mean, that's good enough for me to watch on HBO.
That is worth watching at some point. But, you know, I wouldn't go get it on DVD or nothing. Like, people are buying DVDs anyway.
Like I said, HBO.
The Hobo.
Wait till it's kind of free.
And then we got new movies in theaters this weekend. Three new movies. The one I'm really looking forward to, The Last Stand.
Yes.
Arnold Schwarzenegger as a small town sheriff, border town.
Whooping up with Johnny Knoxville?
Yeah, and Luis Guzman.
I love...
Maybe they're cheap now? I don't know.
I can't wait. in the trailer, you see Luis Guzman whip out the Conan the Barbarian sword.
Yeah.
And be like, you never know. I really want to know what Arnold Schwarzenegger says right after he says that.
Maybe
you say, know he says something.
Maybe you say Hail Crom or something like that.
That'd be so awesome.
And this is a movie where like some dude, some bad guy, he's in custody. They're taking him in the federales or whatever. I don't know who the government is. And he breaks out, and then he's trying to get to Mexico.
In
and
a super fast car.
In a super, super fast car, right? Right, so the, absurd. The fastest car something. In the world. Like the Zero X490, it's faster than the fastest jet in the world.
Helicopters can't even catch
right, up. Right, yeah, so stupid. And apparently he has to go through this one town, which consists of one road, and he's going to get through this town and get to Mexico. He can't go around it in any way. And Schwarzenegger's like, not in my town. I am the sheriff of this town, and we will stop him. And then someone's like, how are you feeling? He's like, old. Because he's old.
Well, he is.
He is old.
He's ancient.
It looks ridiculous, but I love Schwarzenegger movies. I grew up on them.
I mean, seriously, in all reality, when I was in high school, maybe it was middle school, when the last action hero came out, I thought that was the end of Arnold.
Yeah, it was for a little while.
That's what I'm saying. That was the end, and now, like, you know, however many years later, now he's still doing the kind of same deal.
He's doing action, but old action.
I'm digging it.
Yeah, and he's got a whole slate of movies. This is the first of many films for him.
Oh, really?
He's got one coming out with Stallone, where it's two of them as leads together. I think that one's called The Tomb. I forgot what it's about. And what's this other one? I'm thinking. Oh wait. Oh yeah, King Conan. Because you mentioned Conan, he's totally working on a fourth. Because not counting the stupid remake that came out.
Oh dear God, please don't tell me his shirt's gonna be off in that movie.
Well, you know it's Hollywood. First off, he'll HGH it up. He'll get all the nutritionists he needs, and he'll get himself as ripped as possible. Dude, and then they can touch things up digitally.
It doesn't
matter.
It's
like 300, man. They gave everyone extra abs in 300.
Yeah, but at least in 300, these were like guys in like their late 20s.
They'll pull it off.
They're gonna have to pull his skin back.
No, clothespins. They'll be fine. They'll pull it off. I remember
old dudes with their shirts off. Look, I mean,
I know
the new trailer with Sylvester Stallone when his shirt's off.
Yeah,
he looks like hell.
Well, it's, yeah,
with his shirt off.
His skin
is all saggy. It's gonna be the same thing with Arnold.
No, man. I mean, it's possible it'll be a little saggy, but
it's gonna be gross.
All right. When he did Terminator 3, I know that was a little while ago, but before he did Terminator 3, I remember there were pictures of him out there, like in the tabloids, and he was all saggy and he let himself go. He's looking old and decrepit. And then he does the movie. There's the intro shot of him naked. They always introduce a Terminator naked. Dude's totally ripped, like glistening.
That was totally all CG. Like, I don't even think that was Arnold at all.
No, in Terminator 3, it was. In Terminator 3. But they could have touched it up. Like, Photoshopping. You can do digital Photoshopping.
Yes, I can.
So they can do that on King Conan. It's possible. And then the movie's going to be all about him being old King Conan. And, you know, he's the old man. And how does old King Conan live? He's going the Clint Eastwood route.
Okay.
Where his characters, and Stallone, too, to a degree, where their characters address their age. They're not trying to pretend to be young.
Yeah, I call BS because now in all of Stallone's movies, he's got more tattoos than anything.
Well,
that's
just in this one.
And
this Bullet to the Head
the
movie
Expendables.
Coming out.
Tattooed. What is with him in these fake tattoos now that he's old?
He wishes he had tattoos.
Is he going through a midlife crisis?
In his 60s? Maybe. Maybe he is.
I'm an old man. I need tattoos.
He is. That is. I didn't notice. I forgot about the Expendables also.
Yeah.
I wonder if Rambo
up.
Had a tramp stamp. He never took his shirt off.
Oh, man.
I bet he had like a bunch of flowers and vines on his lower back.
Mr. Butterfly.
And a couple of butterflies on his shoulder blades. Man, yeah, I didn't notice that. Yeah, I guess he's going through a late midlife crisis.
I'm just saying, it's
a
weird.
Third life crisis, third of his life left.
Something I noticed. Strange.
Well, those are new movies for the weekend. All right, so we're gonna get ready to take a break here. I need to refill my Yingling. The show is powered by Yingling today. Anyway, it is. We're gonna step into the Crespo Disco really quick. I'm gonna play you a little track. Thank you. Oh yeah. You stopped. No, don't continue. don't continue, please. We're going to go into the Crespo Disco, and that's where I'm going to play some music every week. If you are in a band, if you're a musician, you want your original music featured on our show, if you want it played in the Crespo Disco, you can hit us up at Cinema Crespo Disco. No. cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com to be in the Crespo Disco. We can talk about playing your music on the show. It'll be pretty awesome. Get some exposure. I get some content. It's a win-win for us all. In the meantime, enjoy this. We're going to freshen up our drinks, and we will be back in a bit. See you soon. And we're back. Thank you for sticking around. I hope you enjoyed that song. If you just fast forward through it, it's cool. It's a podcast.
Don't matter.
Do what you want. You already downloaded, so that's really what really matters.
Good enough for me.
Thanks for downloading. We got ourselves some new Yinglings. Drew, how's your Yingling?
Absolutely delicious.
Ah, Yingling for your dingling.
I mean, come on. It's America's oldest brewery, dude.
It is, and it's good stuff.
It's brewed in Pottsville, Pennsylvania.
This show is not sponsored by Yingling, but we will take that sponsor if they want to give it to us.
Oh, definitely. I mean, come on. You send us a 12-pack every week, and we'll talk about it.
There you go. Cheap enough, man. Come on, Yingling. You got the 12-packs laying around. Let's do it. All right, well, now we're going to head into the final segment of our show, but it's going to be the doozy of a segment.
Is it ever?
It's going to be a little different every week, but let's go ahead and get started, and I'll explain it. We'll step into the Crespo Dome. This is where something different will happen each time. If you guys have questions for the show, or for me or Drew specifically, you can send them to cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. We'll read your questions on the show and answer them. You can also follow us on Twitter at Crespo Diso. Drew, what's your Twitter address?
At antihero419.
And how many tweets have you put out there?
Two, maybe?
Maybe two.
Maybe. And they were all in response to tweets that I got.
Right. So. Right. So come on, folks. Let's get Drew in on the Twitter. Let's show him how much fun it is.
I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to be a big tweeter per se. But if you have any questions or comments and you wish to address me through the Twitter, I will respond.
At antihero419.
At antihero419.
We'll get you into the Twitter, dude. I wasn't that into it. And then I started doing the radio thing.
I will resist for as long as I possibly can.
All right, folks. Well, let's see what we can do. Let's get him in on it. Or you can just get us at the show at Crespo Diso. My own account is at Movie Examiner, because I do write for Examiner.com. You can see my reviews at OrlandoMovieExaminer.com for now. We'll have a new show, a new website pretty soon next week. Hopefully you'll be debuting it then. There's the Instagram, Instagram.com/CinemaCrespoDiso. Get us on the Book of Faces, Facebook.com/CinemaCrespoDiso. We're everywhere. YouTube.com/CinemaCrespoDiso. Although you're already listening to this now, so if you're listening to on YouTube, welcome. Welcome to my channel. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Leave a comment below and rate us. But only if it's good, because we're sensitive people. All right, so here we go. Into the Crespo Dome. This week we're going to go over first the 2012 year in review. Let's talk about our favorite films of 2012. Our top 10, top 15, so to speak. I have a top 15.
I was limited in the amount and which movies I could see this year, so I only have a top 10.
Yeah, that's fine.
And it's going to be a strange one too, because like I said, I missed a lot of movies.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, these are our personal favorites of the year. We're not necessarily saying that these were the best or the most well made, or in this particular order. It's just that, you know, in terms of enjoyment, this is how they fell for us. So let's see. I'm going to go ahead and do my 15 through 11, and then we'll trade off on 10 through 1.
Okay.
How about that?
Gotcha.
All right. We just came up with that right now. It's pretty good. On the fly. This is live to tape, people, so there's no stopping. Well, we stop for the music, but otherwise...
we're going.
We're flying by the seat of our pants. My number 15 movie of 2012 is Beasts of the Southern Wild. That's the one with the little black girl in the kind of New Orleans-esque type area, like a huge... Hurricane Katrina, sort of hurricane, comes through and screws everything up. Everything's flooded, and she's trying to survive. And it's really well made. I see it as kind of like, what if Hurricane Katrina hit where the wild things are?
Yeah, that's what everybody said about it.
Yep. So I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's quite good. My number 15. My number 14 was Looper. Good old Joseph Gordon-Levitt doing a version of young Bruce Willis and old Bruce Willis doing himself.
Which was
cool. Cool time travel movie. I enjoyed it. A lot of fun. Number 13 movie for me was Cabin in the Woods. Definitely the best horror film I've seen in a very long time. And, it was great. If you're into horror films in any way, shape, or form, I think you'd like this a lot. The more you're into it, the more you recognize the different tropes and conventions that they're flipping. Number 12 movie for me, Argo, Ben Affleck. Well-made, very well-made movie. It's getting its accolades. A lot of critics groups are giving it awards and stuff. So, it's, you know, good for him. He's 3 for 3, I think, Ben Affleck, in terms of directing.
Well, as a director, he is spot on. Not the best actor in the world.
No,
but,
he took a lot of iffy roles in the past.
I definitely think he has found his calling as a director.
Agreed.
100%.
Agreed. And then the number 11 for me, just missing out on the top 10, was Prometheus, which when that movie came out back in June, I was like, oh, this movie's going to be one of my favorites of the year. And the fact that it made it all the way down to number 11 shows how strong I thought the year was.
Yes.
But it's, you know, crazy sci-fi, alien prequel, sort of. Crazy, crazy movie. Ridley Scott. He still has the chops, man, I think. I really, really dug
Ridley's
it.
Oh, still going strong.
It has its detractors. A lot of people hate on it. And, you know, that's cool. We all got our opinions. But, I enjoyed it. All right, so here we go. What's your top 10 movie of 2012?
Top 10 of 2012 for me is Coriolanus.
Oh, yes. Ray Fiennes, William Shakespeare's Coriolanus.
Yes.
Because he directed it.
Oh, he directed it as
well. He adapted it.
Yes.
What did you like about it so much?
I was just a big fan. It's pretty much a straight remake. They updated it. Because in the story it was, you know, a Roman soldier, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada.
Right.
They still stuck with that, but it was more of a like a futuristic dystopian Rome.
Right, right.
As opposed to like Rome of the past, where that's where Shakespeare took it.
Yeah, because it was still modern.
Oh, it was still very modern. But it was almost futuristic, actually.
Yeah, yeah, dystopian. Yeah, I like that thought. Yeah, that
but,
process.
But it was. I mean, obviously, the original was based in ancient Roman times.
Yes.
The fact that they stuck to the Shakespearean language.
Yeah.
Kind of detracts detracted from. Mm-hmm. From the movie, and it kind of made it hard to understand sometimes.
It's very flowery. He's in it, he's doing his iambic pentameter, and yeah, it is tough. You got to kind of go with the feel.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
oh, he's angry when he's saying these words.
Exactly, but if you follow the body language and kind of the tone of where the movie is
just
going.
Just let it wash over you.
Yeah, and just let it wash over you. Mm-hmm. It's really enjoyable, and I really like the way him and Gerard Butler played off each other.
Right. Yeah, they did have a nice adversarial thing going on.
Yeah, they really had a really good thing going on.
And then they were buddies for a little while, and then they're like, we will fight in the streets.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed it.
I definitely like that movie. I almost forgot that one came out. That one's on the Netflix Instant, too.
Oh, is it?
Awesome. So anyone out there interested in checking out Coriolanus?
Check it out. It's free.
My number 10 movie was The Dark Knight Rises, which I loved it. That's my favorite comic book movie of the year. I'd say outside of like the original Superman movies, the Batman movies are my favorite comic book movies, you know, of all of them.
Uh-huh.
It was a great end to a great trilogy.
Definitely.
I really enjoyed, you know, I thought Bane was great. Catwoman, they worked that in pretty well. They never called her Catwoman. That was interesting.
No, yeah. No, but they did call her Selina.
Yeah, she's Selina.
So we know she is Selina Kyle, so she is Catwoman.
Yeah, and her burglar outfit.
Oh, God, the way...
The super tight leather.
The way Anne Hathaway looked in that movie.
She's like the opposite of Les Mis in that movie.
Yeah, it was really... I really enjoyed watching it.
She's one reason that it was great for watching. Also, I got to see it. Remember, we saw it in the IMAX?
Oh, yeah, the IMAX. Yeah.
So shot scenes in
everything.
IMAX.
We saw the last one in the IMAX, too.
Yeah, well, this one... Yeah, and this one had like so all the scenes blown up, and it filled the whole screen, shot with 70 millimeter
really
IMAX
good.
Photography. Oh, yeah. Gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. Definitely did a lot better job than any comic book movie deserves, I'd say. You know,
than any comic.
Considering the property, it's about a guy that dresses up like a it's a guy that dresses up like a bat. Come on, it's ridiculous. It's at its essence, it's pretty juvenile, but they made it into a badass film for adults.
Well,
and
I mean,
respect that.
The comic book, for the most part, for
the longest time, it was aimed towards kids.
Yeah, but for
even the TV show was aimed towards kids.
But in the 80s, in the comic book, the Frank Miller era of Batman.
Yeah, the cynical 80s.
That stuff was, that wasn't meant for kids.
No, yeah, absolutely. That's when
at all.
That's when comic books, they started making them, writing them towards adults again. And
because,
the graphic novels and stuff started coming out.
Well, it's because the kids who grew up.
They still
want to read comic books.
Yep. Absolutely. Agreed. Absolutely. But still, I stick to my statement. What's your number 9 movie of 2012?
My number 9 movie of 2012 is Branded.
Ah, yes. The Russian-U.S. co-production Branded.
Yes.
All right, go ahead. What did you like about that?
Well, it was... I just liked the whole everything behind it. It was some sort of like weird thing that he had to do of the Red Bull. What was it? It was the ritual of the Red Bull to make him see the truth or something. It's like,
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Like a super ancient ritual where he had to construct this giant pyre and then sacrifice a cow at the right time and do all this stuff. And then he could see what was really happening.
Very, very weird.
Like an ancient practice that like only certain people did, you know, like, apparently, like, Jesus had did it, and somebody else. And like, all these really important people in history, like, that's how they were enlightened, per se.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that's what happened to him, and he saw the way. And it's as weird and out there and crazy as it all was,
mm-hmm.
It's pretty much the truth.
Yeah, about branding and how marketers are changing the way we think and our perception of reality.
Exactly.
What's good looking.
Max von Sydow as the old puppeteer on the island wearing all white and all his super white people. Oh, God, it was so creepy.
I have a feeling all his scenes were shot over a course of like 2 days.
I'm sure.
On a big lot with a lot of green screens.
without those people even ever seeing him, probably.
Right. He just read a bunch of dialogue and got out of there.
I really enjoyed it. It was...
No,
It was different.
It is different.
It was really different.
And it got a really limited release in America. I'm surprised it even came out in theaters here, which is cool that
I'm
we got.
I'm really happy that it did because it opened my eyes.
Yeah, it's very good. I was surprised I got to see my number 9 movie in theaters, Killer Joe, the Matthew McConaughey movie, Killer Joe.
Missed it.
Oh, it was NC-17, which is why it's so surprising that I got to see it, because it just played out of Regal, and most chain theaters like that won't play NC-17 movies just because they pretty much carried them at a loss. No one...
Well, yeah, no one's going to go see it.
They can't advertise NC-17 films, although that was in the age of newspapers. Now it's the age of the internet where there are no such restrictions, because back in the day... Well, what happened is a movie comes out, it's NC-17, and they want to put their ad in the newspaper because that's where people used to get their showtimes. And newspapers didn't want to run ads for NC-17 movies because of the stigma. They're like, that's not what we do. We're not smut magazines. So because they couldn't run ads, they couldn't make money. And since they couldn't make money, movie theaters didn't want to show their movies. So NC-17 became the kiss of death for your film. It would get released in art house theaters, and then home video, and it might make a couple $1 million. Now it's the internet. Newspapers don't matter anymore. You know, movies are advertised in different ways. So some theaters are now starting to take more chances with NC-17. It was cool that Killer Joe came out. It was a pretty crazy movie. Definitely earned the NC-17 between, like, the just the full frontal nudity and the over-the-top violence and the crazy themes.
Fun stuff.
Everything that you want to see in a Matthew McConaughey movie. I'm not talking about his full frontal nudity. He does get nude, but yeah, you don't see everything. Other full frontal. It's a crazy movie. He plays a hired hitman who Emil Hirsch, the guy, the once and future Speed Racer, probably never again Speed Racer.
Oh, what a great movie that was!
Yeah, he hires a killer to kill his. They need to kill his mom, who doesn't live with them anymore, but she has an insurance policy. I forget how it works. They need money. They hire the killer, things go wrong, and Killer Joe is it's a crazy movie. It's really good. That one is on the Redbox now for sure, but I think I saw that it's rated R. So they might have
maybe TVMA, because they do that sometimes on the Redbox.
To the movies?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I saw the ads at rated R, and I was like, oh, that's a shame.
Maybe they edited it down for
That's what I'm saying. I think it's been edited down. Maybe they put it out on R, and then if you got on DVD, like the bonus disc would have the unrated version on it. I don't know.
I hate that.
That's ridiculous. But even if they did edit it down, I'm sure it's still pretty good. You still got to check it out. It gets crazy. So yeah, that's my number 9. What do you got for number 8, dude?
Number 8, we have Looper.
Oh, Looper. Yes. Yeah. What did you like about it?
I'm just a sucker for anything that has to do with time travel.
Yeah.
I'm also a big Jeff Daniels fan.
Yes, Jeff Daniels. Yes.
Let's see here. What else? The psychic powers were okay. I did like... I thought the ending was appropriate, and I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I liked the build-up to the Rainmaker and
the
kid with the crazy psychic powers and stuff.
I thought that was really cool. The only thing that I absolutely hated about it was Joseph Gordon-Levitt in his Bruce Willis face.
The makeup.
It was absolutely unneeded. Like, you put him on there, and then you do the flashback or the flash forward or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll accept that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is Bruce Willis
right.
in the past.
We don't need the
cool.
fake nose.
I get it. It was totally distracting.
Yeah.
It kind of took away from the whole feel of everything.
I was
really angry with that.
I gotta agree with that.
But, I mean, still, I'm a sci-fi and a time travel guy, so it's okay.
Word. I agree. I like it very much too. My number 8 movie was Lincoln, the Steven Spielberg's Lincoln.
I missed that.
I'm a Spielberg nut. I love myself some Spielberg.
I love some Spielberg too, and I'm a big fan of Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, you put Daniel Day-Lewis in a movie, and he's going to get the nomination for the Oscar, and then he's probably going to win it.
Most likely.
Because he is just that good.
He is that good. He does a great, great Lincoln. It's like watching a movie. I feel like, hey, if this was Abraham Lincoln, if this is what he feels like Abraham Lincoln was like, then I'm sure it is, because he's that good.
He is.
I'll just trust his interpretation of him. And he talking about another high-pitched voice like Ryan Gosling. He played Lincoln with a higher pitch, like a reedy voice.
Really?
Yeah, which apparently, according to written accounts at the time, Lincoln had a high pitched voice.
Really?
Which worked to his advantage when they did the public debates, because the debates were always outside, and a higher pitched voice carries better. Yeah, so more people could hear him. As opposed to, like, you know, Stephen Douglas. Was that who he debated? I can't remember. Anyway, that's sixth grade history. Great movie. It focuses on the last 2 months of Lincoln's life, you know, before he gets assassinated. Spoiler alert. And it's all about the passing of the 13th Amendment, which is, you know, about the prohibition of slavery. Again, spoiler alert, in case you haven't noticed. It's good. It's good. It's like the Ocean's 11 of amendment passing. Because it's all about Lincoln doing backroom deals. And he's like, he puts together his team. He has, like, these three guys. And they
What wasn't this movie based on that book, like A Cabinet of Foes or something?
A Team of Rivals.
Fuck.
Cabinets of Foes.
Cabinet of Foes.
That's awesome. Team of Rivals.
I forget.
Yeah, because all the people
in the story, like,
all his political opponents, he made his cabinet members and stuff. Smart guy.
Exactly.
So he was able to get the right people to cross the right bridges, cross the right gaps, and get just enough votes to have the U.S. government admit that, hey, black people are people too. You know? What a crazy idea.
Yeah, crazy idea.
What a crazy concept. Tommy Lee Jones is in it. He's awesome. Daniel Day-Lewis kills it. A lot of great... Tons of great actors, as a matter of fact.
How does everybody look in their powdered wigs?
Oh, great. Everyone looks, you know, it's top rate production design. You know, definitely whatever people were wearing at the time, they're wearing in that movie. And it's really, really cool. So, Lincoln, yeah, I definitely liked it. Number seven, go ahead, dude.
Number seven was Cabin in the Woods.
Ah, yes. Yeah, sorry, let's talk a little bit about Cabin in the Woods again.
It was a really original horror movie.
Yes,
I mean,
it is.
When you see the previews for it, well, you know, like the first 2 weeks of the previews.
Right.
You just figured it was typical horror movie.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe even a mishmash because they showed kind of some of the different monsters.
Right.
And then you watch it and it is something completely different.
Yeah, it goes off the wall.
It's off the wall. And the guys who play the dudes on the computers, you know, the two main guys
Richard Jenkins and I can't remember the other guys.
Setting up the scenario and whatnot.
Yeah.
Every time it cuts to them,
Bradley Whitford. I remember his name, Bradley Whitford.
So hard.
Yeah, those guys are awesome.
It's so good. Just like everything, like.
It's like they squeeze in some office style comedy into a horror film.
Yeah, exactly.
But about the inner workings of, like, these people trying to keep the end of the world at bay.
No, exactly. They're like, and at the end of it, like, you think, oh my God, these people are just, like, sacrificing these people.
Yeah.
And then you come to realize, no, it's for the good of everyone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's crazy.
We're keeping the gods at bay.
All this,
seriously?
All the things that they twist around,
yeah.
Like the people that save the day,
what
saving the day means. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Oh, man, it was. It was a top-notch horror flick, and it was almost with a sci-fi twist.
With a sci-fi twist, yes. Yeah. That's how I like my martinis. Yeah, good choice. Definitely good choice. I definitely agree with you there. That's a very good movie. My number seven was Moonrise Kingdom, Wes Anderson's Moonrise Kingdom. I love that film.
Can I interrupt you for one point? That's going to actually be my number six.
Oh, we were so close. We're right there. All right. So we can talk about them at the same time.
Together. So my number six was also Moonrise Kingdom.
All right. Well, yeah, go ahead. When did you see it? Because I don't think we saw it.
No,
we did not see it together.
No, we did not see it together.
Because I saw a press screening of that,
actually. Yeah, I saw it on the Redbox like a lot of movies because I don't have time to see them when they first come out.
And Redbox is cheap.
Exactly.
We're not endorsing it, but if they want to sponsor us, we're free.
I'll definitely take some free rentals.
Tweet us, Redbox. Tweet us. At Chris
no, but yeah, it's a Wes Anderson movie, and
yep.
I'm a big fan of pretty much anything that he does.
Royal Tenenbaums, Rushmore, Bottle Rocket,
all of it.
Life Aquatic,
yep,
all good stuff.
All fantastic.
Yep.
I was a little angry of how little Bill Murray there was. Because
there could be more Bill Murray.
Well, only because they pretty much used all the best Bill Murray shots in the trailer.
They did. Well, because there wasn't that much to use.
I know, but everything he did was so good.
Yeah, they even started doing commercials where it's just Bill Murray on the set, being like, I'm Bill Murray, let me introduce this movie. And he talks about all the characters, and he's there in his costume, and he's doing that droll Bill Murray thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They knew what they had. They employed him well in the marketing.
Yeah,
but there's also Bruce Willis, Francis McDormand, Jason Schwartzman.
Bruce Willis was weird in the movie.
He does a sad sack thing really well.
Yeah.
I thought he was a very pathetic type character.
Oh, he totally was. He did it well, but it wasn't the Bruce Willis that you'd think of it.
Right, which is part of that's definitely why he did it, you know, to subvert your idea of who he is and what he can do.
I guess it was just the Wes Anderson Bruce Willis.
Yes, everyone's a bit of a sad sack in Wes Anderson's world. Ed Norton, the cigarette smoking, wine drinking scoutmaster Ed Norton.
He was great.
Which is funny. He constantly keeps doing movies where his character smokes cigarettes.
Yeah.
He is very, very anti-cigarette,
Ed
Norton.
He smokes a lot of cigarettes in movies.
Between Fight Club, and he always had a cigarette in his hand in this one. They must have been like horrible herbal things filled with catnip and lettuce and mint.
Or maybe it was one of those like Enjoys or whatever. So he's just smoking paper, you know?
No, they're real cigarettes. Yeah. You can see the paper burning. Attention to detail. It was also shot on 16mm, which you know, on DVD, you don't really notice stuff like that. I mean, it looks, everything's, you know, digitized. But when I saw it in the theater, I got to see it at the Enzion over here. And they had, you know, they still show movies on film. And they had a 16mm film print.
Very nice.
So it was nice and warm looking and nice soft focus. You know, it was very, that's going away. Now everything's digital and super clean and austere. And I don't know if that's the right word. But anyway, I definitely enjoyed that one. My number 7, your number 6. All right, that worked out very well. Awesome. Well, then my number 6, I don't think you had a chance to see this one. Killing Them Softly?
I totally missed it.
Oh, man, that is...
I need to see it as soon as I can.
Killing Them Softly, you would love it. It gets my vote for most cynical film of the year.
Oh, and I'm a very cynical person, so I think I would enjoy that a lot.
It's definitely good for our time period. It's very much about... It's in the time period. It's set in, like, 2008, right around the election, right before the 08 election, between McCain and Obama, and then leading up to the actual election itself. So the markets, the world markets, are on the verge of crashing. Things are looking really, really dire. I think that started going down around July. The bank bailout, the auto industry bailout, you know, that's all in the background. While there's this whole story about a mob-protected poker game getting knocked over, and all the money being stolen by these two stupid goons, and then they have to bring in Brad Pitt's character. He's a mob enforcer, like their IA, their internal police investigation, and he's going around finding out who did what and getting ready to mete out justice, you know, slick back hair, Brad Pitt style. He's going to kill them softly. He explains what killing them softly means, which is, you know, a little on the nose. But actually, a lot of the movie is very much on the nose. It's very heavy-handed about what it's about. You know, America has become a community of businessmen, and where everyone's in it for themselves, and, you know, just pay me my money. That's what it's all about, pay me my money. So, it's good. It's very talky. It's by the guy that did Chopper.
Loved it.
Chopper's insane.
Saw that in theaters.
You saw
actually.
That in theaters. A lot of people
lucked out. That random turn of events.
Random
put
turn
me
of
in
events.
That theater.
And you still remember to this day.
Oh, to this day, of course. No, it was fantastic.
And then his last movie was The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. One of the best titles ever in filmdom. And a fantastic film, kind of like an anti-Western with. There's practically no action. It's a character study.
Really slow.
Very slow
still
paced.
Very good.
Yes. Very epic. I enjoyed that one very much. And this one it's different from that. Has different style, but you can still tell it's a very arty take on the genre. Same director, Andrew Dominik, crazy Australian guy. So I liked it a lot. Killing Them Softly, my number 6. All right, give me your number 5, dude.
My number 5 was Prometheus.
All right, go ahead. What did you like about it so much?
I mean, it's a it's a Ridley Scott movie.
B,
it's science fiction.
Yes.
C, we're in space.
Oh,
there's there's lots of drama. There's lots of suspense.
Yes, there is.
Depending, you know, it's arguably an Alien prequel.
Right.
So, you know, that's always fun.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the Alien movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the acting was done well.
Mm-hmm.
I was a big fan of the whole, you know, this is the beginning of mankind. Like, this was how it all came about. You know, it's seeded by this who came from over here.
The kind of the ancient aliens take on the beginning
of
mankind.
I'm kind of into that. I would definitely say it's possible.
Right.
And,
Well, yeah, I mean, so, we don't know. We don't know how things started.
Nobody knows anything.
So it posits an entertaining view.
But yeah, I think it's a very entertaining view on where we all came from and how it could also go terribly wrong.
Right. Horribly wrong.
So, you know, I'm a big fan of that, too.
The that scene where, what's known as the abortion scene, where she has the alien inside of her.
That was, seriously, I was actually, like, crawling in my seat.
Yeah.
Like, my hands were on the side. And my feet were moving to get away from the screen.
Yeah, I
wish I could have moved farther back from the screen.
That was
during
intense.
That scene.
It was
really intense.
Oh man, just for that scene alone. For that scene alone, the movie's worth checking out. Again, a lot of people hate on it, but you know, people can hate.
Haters gonna hate.
All right, so my number five movie of the weekend, Life of Pi. Did you get a chance to see that one?
No, I did not.
Life of Pi is the one with the Indian kid who's he's on a boat with his family and a whole bunch of animals, like transporting zoo animals. The boat sinks during a storm.
Tiger.
In the South Pacific. And the kid is the only survivor on a lifeboat with a tiger, a hyena,
and
an orangutan. And
see, in the trailer, all you see is the tiger.
Yeah, in the trailer, they only show the tiger. But in the movie, it starts out with him, a tiger, the hyena, an orangutan, and a zebra with a broken leg. So take a guess which one goes out first.
Zebra with a broken leg.
Yep. Spoiler alert. But yeah, then it becomes quickly, it's just him and the tiger.
Because the tiger eats everything else?
The tiger eats everything else, because that's what tigers do. That tiger went tiger. and then the whole movie is just him surviving out in the water, hoping to get rescued, trying to just live, and also there being a tiger on the boat. Tiger's name, by the way, was Richard Parker. That's pretty awesome.
Weird.
Yeah, I love that part. I love that his name is Richard Parker. It's a great movie. It's actually very, very beautifully made. It's an Ang Lee film. So Ang Lee, super arty director.
He
knows what's up. A lot of the movie is shot on I think it's what they built was the world's largest water tank.
Okay.
So they could shoot all the water scenes, because there's a lot of stuff, obviously, that's underwater. And then the huge 12-foot-tall green screen wall out on the side. So then they could elongate the whole ocean, and then they put in very painterly sunsets and sunrises. And the sky is always very gorgeous looking. So it's great to look at. And then it came out in 3D. I missed the 3D.
Eye candy.
Yeah, I missed the 3D, but I heard he did a great job with the 3D. So, you know, these master filmmakers like James Cameron, Martin Scorsese, Ang Lee, Ridley Scott with Prometheus, when these guys make movies with 3D, that's when that tool gets used. Well, Spielberg with Tintin, that 3D stuff was awesome. All right, so go ahead and give us the number four movie of 2012.
My number four of 2012 was Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Ah, yes, the film, the food documentary.
Yes, well, I mean, I'm a bit of a foodie. I am a chef myself.
Yeah, you are a foodie, absolutely.
So you know, it's one of those things. It's close to my heart, and I mean, the documentary was very well made. You know, it really just shows how much passion and hard work goes into just the simplest thing of rice and fish.
Right.
It's literally the most simple thing. It's a scoop of vinegar rice and a slab of fish.
Right. And they take a brush of something and they brush it on very gently.
But there's like 75 years worth of knowledge going behind this and practice. And
he still says he hasn't achieved perfection.
No, exactly. And it just shows the length and the amount of passion and skill and know-how that goes into these, you know, just the simplest food. And, you know, I mean, you know.
And it's gorgeous, too. Oh, it's shot beautifully.
I mean, the shot of them massaging the octopus for 8 hours. Like, they have to massage this octopus for 8 hours to soften it enough to where it's edible, basically.
Yeah, a lot of work goes into it.
So, but it's just slow motion water just washing over it in a colander.
With the original Philip Glass music. So it's very regal and very, very epic sounding.
Very, 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 very beautiful.
Yeah, and then the place where he cooks at, it's like this little stall in a subway tunnel in Tokyo that seats about 10 people.
Yep.
They're booked like several months in advance if you want to eat there. And then each plate, like when you're done eating, the bill is pretty much equal to like $300 American, something like that. It's an experience.
And it's not like sit down, talk, eat appetizers. No, you sit there, he puts a piece of fish on his hand, kills it, puts it in front of you. You immediately
pick it up and you eat
it in your mouth, and then it's on to the next person. It just keeps going like that until you're done, and then you leave.
Yeah.
You pay, and you are happy.
It is funny. It is funny that one guy, a Japanese food critic, talks about how he likes to eat there every now and then because that's how often he can eat there. The place is always busy. And he's always intimidated every time he sits down to eat his food. He's like, oh my God, what am I getting this time? You know, so epic. Yeah, good choice. I really like that one too. So that was your number four. My number four was Zero Dark Thirty, which I saw this morning. That's how much I like that one.
Wanted to see it last night. Couldn't happen.
Yeah. We had things going. Had to get things in order to make sure that this would happen.
No, so. I know.
But pretty soon down the road, we'll you'll get your chance. Zero Dark Thirty, awesome movie. We talked about it earlier. Why it was so great. And I guess we don't have to talk about it again. If you want to hear how much I liked it, just rewind. Go back to like the 25-30 minute mark. All right, number three movie. Go ahead, dude. Top three of 2012 for Drew.
My number three was The Dark Knight.
Ah, yes. Okay.
So,
what did you like about it so much? Because before you get to inside, let me explain real quick. You are very big into comic books. You are a comic book
junkie.
You've been into it for years and years and years.
It's an addiction. Yeah. I'm a junkie. It's
so,
okay.
So you know all the ins and outs. You of all the people I know. You are the pickiest when it comes to comic book movies.
Well, it's because most of them are garbage.
Most of them, right? Well, here you go, people. check this out. You ready, people? Are you listening? Drew, what did you think of the Spider-Man 1 and 2 with Tobey Maguire?
Okay, the first Spider-Man, it started off well. It started off well enough.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. It started off well enough. We got Spider-Man. He's kind of a nerdy guy. He gets his powers. Green Goblin.
Yeah.
Okay, we're good.
Okay.
It's cool.
Okay.
Everything's fine.
Okay.
Was it Spider-Man 2 with when they had the
Doc Ock?
Doc Ock and the Gwen Stacy?
Yes. No. Gwen Stacy was 3.
Oh, that was okay. So, the second one I was still okay with.
People love the second one.
Because Tobey Maguire, it was, you know, he was a good Peter Parker.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
A good old Peter Parker, like a traditional Peter Parker.
Right.
Tobey Maguire was a very good traditional Peter Parker. So the second one was good. There was, you know, there was a little more action.
And then the third one.
Doc Ock was Doc Ock.
Alfred
you know, it's only. I mean, the, whatever.
Yeah.
They at least got the origin right and you know the arms and everything. So
right.
Second one was good enough. The third one. I wanted to slip my wrists.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad.
It was, not only was it horrible, but Gwen Stacy didn't die.
And for people that don't know, in Spider-Man lore, her death is integral to his development as a character.
Yeah. In Marvel comic lore, Gwen Stacy died. Like, Spider-Man doesn't save her.
Right, he has to make a choice between saving a lot of people or her, and he saves a lot of people.
Exactly, and it's, you know, it was a really hard choice, and it really showed the human side of this quote-unquote superhero.
It develops him. It's a huge moment in history.
And in this movie, it didn't happen.
They actually used that conceit in the first Spider-Man, what Green Goblin has a bus full of people and Mary Jane hanging off a bridge, and he makes Spider-Man choose one, but then somehow he saves them both anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. So that and then the third one. I mean, I really liked. I mean, obviously, when you're thinking the third one, also it's Black Suit Spider-Man and Venom.
Right.
That Topher Grace as Venom.
Bad choice.
Was the worst choice.
Right.
That you could possibly make.
Right.
And then even so, when Spider-Man got the black suit and he turned all emo
and he was dancing and his hair was in his face.
Oh, yep. It was an abortion.
Right. Well, a lot of people don't like the third one anyway.
Yeah, third one was terrible.
And you're not that. You didn't sound too big on the first two. A lot of people love those movies.
Yeah.
So, but in this case, The Dark Knight Rises.
Okay. Well, The Dark Knight Rises. This is. I mean, this the whole reboot that. Mr. Nolan did for this franchise was an absolutely fantastic job.
Right.
He kept it very straight to lore and what was going on.
Right.
I mean, the third one, there are some arguable points where he took some liberties with storylines.
Well, he does this thing where he tries to ground things more in reality, so Bane isn't full of like some... crazy, quote, venom that makes him super strong. He just has a painkiller so he can live.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Not in pain.
Exactly. So, you know, he took some liberties there. But other than that, I thought it was a very fitting end for his trilogy.
Right.
Especially with what he had going on. Once again, just a very, very good adaptation of a comic book. A great comic book movie.
All right, yeah. I mean, yeah, I loved it. I loved it. My number 10, like I said, definitely, yeah. And the only comic book movie to make my my list at all. So, yes.
No, I mean, I dropped Spider-Man from my list, even though that was, I think, a little tangent here, but I thought The Amazing Spider-Man,
yeah,
the new one that just came out,
yeah,
I thought that was probably the best Spider-Man movie that's been made so far.
Okay.
So.
All right. Word. That's good to know. Good to know. They're getting it right this time. Maybe. Sort of. Slightly.
Hopefully.
They will be killing Gwen Stacy in this one eventually. So
they better.
They will.
If they don't, I'm going to...
They killed her dead. Spoiler.
Boom, boom.
So they're going to kill her.
I will totally X.
All right. My number three of the year was The Master. P.T. Anderson's The Master. That's that movie is insane. And... What, you want my piece of paper? There you go. That movie's absolutely insane. I love The Master. Joaquin Phoenix gives, like, the best performance possible. What are we looking at here? Oh, I see. He gives the best performance possible. He's so over the top. He's, like, just absolutely... his mannerisms and his face. His face is always all screwed up, and the way his hands are always... Just his body movements are... He seems legitimately insane. Let me just put it that way. Joaquin Phoenix in this movie, I wonder about him. I wonder about his mental health. Because coupled with some of the things he's done in his personal life, I really do wonder. Maybe
he is crazy.
Maybe Pete Tanerson just exploited this poor guy. That could be possible. It's like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have this crazy man. Let me put him on camera. But he does an amazing job. It's a crazy movie. Very, very... It's kind of about Scientology, but not really. It's in the 50s. Philip Seymour Hoffman is kind of an L. Ron Hubbard type of guy. The best description I've read recently of P.T. Anderson, the director who did Boogie Nights. That was the movie that broke him out, Boogie Nights. And Magnolia was a big deal. Then he did There Will Be Blood. And now he's got this under his belt. And Punch Drunk Love. All great movies. I read that he's like the Radiohead of directors, and that he made a couple of commercially viable films, and now he's just off doing his own thing. He's working on his own rhythms, trying to do different things. And if you don't like it, screw you. This is what he does, you know. So I think that's really, really
either
cool.
You're in or you're out.
It's a very audacious film, kind of a difficult film, and that, you know, thematically, it's kind of, there's a lot going on, and no answers are given to you. So that for that reason alone, I love it. And it's gorgeous. Shot in 70 millimeter, the whole thing. Absolutely beautiful film. My number three. And I see here you handed me your list. Our number two and our number one movies are the same.
Yes, they are.
We came up with our list independently,
mm-hmm.
And we've matched up twice here. So let's go ahead and talk about our second favorite film of 2012 is Cloud Atlas.
It was really good.
Cloud Atlas is crazy good.
I mean, it is a bit confusing.
On first time around, it is. Yes.
It definitely takes a little bit of thinking and some mental fortitude to,
yep,
to wrap it all up.
Yep.
But as a whole, I mean, once you get over that, it's just so good. It's so audacious.
It is
what it was.
It is. It's over your face. It's over. Oh, your face. It's over your face.
It is.
It's in the top.
Yep.
It's in the top, and it's over
your face. Yep.
It's the biggest movie I've seen in a long time. It's six different storylines told during six different time periods that range over 500. Years, the span of 500
maybe,
years, maybe even more.
Maybe longer.
Maybe even thousands. It's kind of unknown based on the closing and the opening.
The
wrapping scenes,
yeah,
the narrative framing
device.
Well,
yeah, but like the most futuristic one is just like this many years after the fall.
It was like 100 winters after the fall,
yeah,
or something
like
that. Exactly,
so very like epic. All of a sudden, so there was some fall.
There was a great fall, and people lost track of time.
Yes.
Crazy movie. Tom Hanks, Halle Berry, Hugo Weaving, what's this guy's name? Jim Broadbent, that Ben Whishaw guy, and then they all play like different characters and the different storylines. So they're all playing six, seven different characters.
The great part is all of the stories, they all rise and peak
at the same
fall,
time,
and the whole thing. It all just somehow the five stories make one story.
The six stories.
The six stories make one story.
Yep.
It's it, but it, it's,
and then they all end at the same time.
Exactly.
And they all have different endings.
Start, but they all have different starts, different middles, different peaks, different falls. But all the peaks happen at the same time.
Yeah.
And all the falls happen at the same time. So it's like it's one whole story.
There's a lot of trust between the Wachowskis and Tom Tykwer as directors. There's a lot of trust between them and the audience in that they're willing to have faith in their audience. That we're going to hit you with a lot of information in this certain manner, and we believe that you'll be able to follow it along. And I think they succeeded.
I think they did too. Yeah. I mean, there was it was a little off.
Well,
it's not traditional, you know, the way,
oh, yeah,
the way
yeah.
it's all set up.
Absolutely.
It's,
yeah. It takes a while. I had to watch the movie twice to really figure out how I felt about
yeah.
it. And the second time watching it, the first 5 minutes was like a revelation. It was like, oh, all these things make sense to me now. This is
well,
incredible.
I
even understand what old Tom Hanks is saying. He's like the true, and the long gone, and the bye-bye. You know, he's talking all weird, but I picked up on it the second time around. So that's awesome. Yeah, that was our number two movie, and we both felt Django Unchained was our
number
favorite
one.
Film of 2012.
It was fantastic. It was the movie of much pudding blood. I like to call it the pudding blood.
The
movie.
Viscera, man.
It was a bloody movie, but I've seen bloody movies.
Yeah, but you know what? I've watched a few action movies since then. With people getting shot and there's, you know, blood.
Well, it was all
and
about
now,
the viscosity
now,
of
yeah,
the blood.
Exactly.
Like,
now it seems like it doesn't...
Like,
nothing
this,
adds up.
This guy got shot in the arm and it looked like a pillow of red pudding exploded.
Yeah. It's, the amount of corn syrup that must have been used on that set.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
It was an incredible film. It's Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, no, exactly. I mean, the story was great. The acting was great.
Yep.
Just everything about it. I mean, I feel bad about saying this, but after seeing Don Johnson in that movie, I really want to buy a white suit.
Oh, the Colonel Sanders look?
Oh, my God.
He looked good with that, with the suit and the mustache.
Well, why don't you come on in.
Come on in. Oh, you slipped the dandyish thing he had going on.
Oh, man, but he was so vile.
And DiCaprio, oh, he was so good.
And
Christoph Waltz,
then,
I mean, come on, Jamie Foxx.
And then out of nowhere, boom, cut to a bunch of dudes on horses talking about holes in bedsheets.
Right, the whole pre-clan regulators.
So funny.
Like, all right, we'll come back with full regalia. And everyone's like, yeah, that's it. So weird. Weird. That's kind of like the opposite of Birth of a Nation, which is a D.W. Griffith movie from the silent film era. And it was a huge, huge epic, even by their standards. It was a ridiculously sized epic with huge casts, lots of action, black and white movie in which the Klan are the heroes. And the movie is about the scourge that are like minorities.
Yeah.
And now the Klan are wiping all these people out of our towns. And that's great of them. That's what America is all about. And it's a messed up movie, you know, especially
yeah.
when you look back. Even then, people should be like, this is messed up. And
no one
said anything. Now everyone's like, oh, my God, I can't believe they made this. That movie, they even played it at the White House. It was such a big deal. It was a very, very big deal. It was a very, very successful film because it was so big and so well made for its time period. D.W. Griffith, his name is still known for a reason. So this is kind of like an answer to that. Tarantino, in part, he wanted to make a movie about that time period that showed the opposite version of these people, which that they were all idiots, they were yokels, they thought they were better than others, they thought their shit didn't stink, you know, but it probably stunk worse.
Oh, much worse.
Because, you know, their
worse.
Diets back then were terrible, eating a lot of rotten meat and
yep.
Salt tack, hard tack, and salted pork. But yeah, Tarantino, crazy good music, great acting, awesome dialogue.
Lots of blood.
Made a ton of money. We talked about it earlier about how much money it's making compared to his other films. So that's awesome that we had the same top two.
Yeah.
It's funny that works out. Let's talk about the worst of 2012.
Oh, the worst.
Go ahead. Give us your list of worst in no particular order.
Well, my list of in no particular order.
Yeah.
I've got three here for you.
All right, go
we
ahead.
We have Contraband.
Starring, the Mark Wahlberg movie.
Mark Wahlberg movie.
Yep.
Underworld Awakening.
Oof.
And Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Those are three stinkers.
Yeah, they were really bad. I mean, I really like Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
But not even that could save that Contraband movie.
It was just boring.
It was ill-conceived. It was boring. The action wasn't action-y enough.
And it's
the
a remake.
It wasn't story-y enough.
It's a remake of a Dutch film.
Oh, man. They should have... Yeah, I would have rather seen the Dutch film.
The original version? Yeah. Now I don't want to see it because the Contraband's so bad. It's like, I don't want to sit through this again.
Seriously.
Underworld. Underworld. Not a fan of this series.
I'm just a fan of sci-fi. I'm really not into the whole vampires versus werewolves thing.
Lichens, please.
Whatever. I don't think it's cool. I don't think vampires are sexy. I'm not into that stupid crap. But for some reason, I can't stay away from Kate Beckinsale in skin tight stuff.
Right. Hey, so Kate Beckinsale's really, a win.
I mean, she's only.
But the movie stinks.
Yeah, the movie's terrible. And then Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter started off with, from the bits and pieces that I've read, a pretty good book.
It is a good book. I enjoyed it.
The previews for the movie were great.
Yep.
And the movie was a stinking pile of shit.
It is a stinking pile. It's horrible. I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it's on my list, too, of worst of 2012.
The action's bad, and the CG is worse.
It's illogical. It's stupid.
It just doesn't make...
It's ugly. It's ugly, too.
It is an ugly movie, and I'm a big fan of like alternate history and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like especially in the comic books and stuff like that.
Right.
Like,
the what if universe.
Yeah. Well, the what if universe, or even Marvel does a Marvel like 1792 or whatever, where it's like Marvel characters in the 1800s.
Right.
Which I think is really cool. And
on ships on the
seas. Exactly. This is an alternate history right up my alley, you would think. And it was, so bad.
It's a stinker. It's also on my list of worst of 2012. Filling out my list, there's that. There's Alex Cross. Tyler Perry is a detective in someone else's movie.
I'm sorry, any Tyler Perry movie might as well just put on the
it's
list.
It's not really a Tyler Perry movie, though. He just acted in it. It's a Rob Cohen movie, and that guy is horrible. Rob Cohen's horrible.
When someone decides that casting Tyler Perry as your lead is a good move,
that guy doesn't know what's up.
They should be shot in the streets.
I don't know. Well, we're not condoning that anyone get shot. I would like to say that Cinema Crespedito does not condone people get dragged out of their house and shot for making movies. Just saying. But I understand your anger and vitriol. I get it, dude. I get it. Alex Cross, it stinks. The Three Stooges. I saw the whole Three Stooges because it's a Farrelly Brothers movie. I love the Three Stooges, so I gave it a shot. Yeah. I wanted to give it an honest chance.
I saw like 15 minutes of it on HBO, and it was...
It's awful.
I changed the channel as fast as I could.
It is awful, absolutely. Battle Shit.
I did not see the battle shit.
Oof! You saved yourself about 2 hours and 15 minutes of your life.
Which is good because I figure, I like Liam Neeson, but even in the previews, he doesn't look like he's doing anything.
Waste of Liam Neeson.
That guy.
He was too busy fighting wolves.
That kid from Savages and John Carter.
Or Taylor Kitsch.
Whatever.
Who had a horrible year financially. Mm-hmm. John Carter bombed. Battleship did not do well. Savages did not do well financially.
Yeah,
so,
there's
not
that.
Good. That guy is screwed.
If you, once again, you're deciding to cast a popular R&B singer in a semi-lead role, and it's pretty much guaranteed to be a failure.
Total Recall, the remake of Total Recall. I absolutely hated that movie.
You know,
it was so boring that has to be offensive.
It was boring. It was offensive.
Offensively boring.
I wasn't angry with Colin Farrell in the movie.
He just did his thing. It's just ineptly directed.
Once again, you put Kate Beckinsale in anything tight, and I'm a happy camper, so...
Kate Beckinsale's cool. Jessica Biel's cool. I mean, all that stuff is cool and all, but it... Total Recall, the original, so good.
Amazing. Yeah, I agree. But it's not. It's totally not the original. It's not even a remake of the original.
Not even a remake. And then The Raven with John Cusack.
Yeah, I missed that one too. Which is a shame because I'm a fan of John.
It's just terrible. Trust me on this one.
It's fine. I won't.
Trust me.
I won't.
It is terrible. All right. So Oscar nominations.
Oh, what about? Oh, I've got it.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot.
Notable surprises.
I forgot the most surprising movies of 2012. Thanks for reminding me. That's why I have a guy here to help me out.
Yeah.
Most surprising movies of 2012. Go ahead and give us your list real quick, dude.
All right. Yeah. My most surprising of 2012. Snow White and the Huntsman. Only because Charlize Theron
she was awesome.
Really, really good job in them. Everyone else, I couldn't give a crap less. But Charlize Theron was amazing.
Right.
Dread was a standout for me.
Okay.
I missed it in theaters. Kind of wished I'd seen it in 3D. Especially with all the really super fun special effects.
Yep.
Ghost Rider. The first one was such an abortion of a movie.
Oof, so bad.
And the second one was so much fun.
Of the Crank movies.
Well, you see, but it was like the Punisher movies. Like the first one with Thomas Jane, garbage.
No, the first one had Dolph Lundgren.
Okay.
You forgot about that one.
The one with Dolph Lundgren is almost as bad, but it gets points because it was back in the day, and the scene where he cauterizes his own wounds with a very hot combat knife.
Yeah, that was very Punisher.
Is really awesome.
I love how they put charcoal on his face to simulate scruff.
So the Thomas Jane one was bad. Then they had
the
remake.
Yeah, with Ray Stevenson.
With Ray Stevenson, yeah. That one was good. Same thing with the Ghost Rider. First one bad.
Felt like they got it better the second time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then my other one, Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It was. I mean, if you can sit through. The kind of boring storytelling.
It's
kind of
slow. It's a little slow. Purposefully slow.
And things like that. But just the visuals are absolutely gorgeous.
That one's on the Netflix Instant.
The way they do the framing and just the saturation of the colors and everything. It is pure eye candy.
Very very 80s style, like synth score. You know, like wah, a lot of droning. I love stuff like
but
that.
But like I said, it's pretty much just eye candy.
My most surprising movies of 2012, I agree with you on Dread. Dread blew my mind on how good it was. I was expecting it to be,
garbage, like the first one.
Oh, and it's so good. I can't recommend it enough to people.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
if
definitely.
You like action, you want to see someone's head melted from the inside.
If you want to see an awesome action movie, Dread is your movie.
And at times, strangely beautiful with the high frame rate, slow motion stuff.
Oh, of course.
And the oh man,
the slow mo drug.
The slow mo drug. What a great way to come up with slow motion.
Give me some of that.
Man, the 21 Jump Street. I love that one.
Oh, that was
that one surprised
fun
me.
And surprisingly funny.
Surprising,
especially for Channing Tatum, because I'm not a fan of him. But I didn't not like him in the movie.
It was the year of Channing Tatum between that and Magic Mike, and G.I. Joe got pushed off, and he was in something else. Haywire at the beginning of the year.
Haywire was a good movie.
It was the year of Channing Tatum.
Mr. Soderbergh.
Chronicle, the found footage, superhero origin film about a bunch of teenagers that find something alien. It gives them superpowers, and they develop their powers. I thought it was really good use of the genre, the found footage genre.
Yeah, definitely. And it was almost a comic book movie.
And it was like the birth of a superhero and a supervillain.
Super
of both. It was more about the supervillain birth of,
like
which is very cool.
Yeah.
And then End of Watch, the Jake Gyllenhaal, Michael Pena.
I
missed it. Yeah, like that's another found footage type of POV type story. In that case, that approach wasn't really necessary, but they still did a good job. It's a movie about a couple of LA cops, young cops, and they end up getting into some tough shit, some crazy cartel stuff, and it's good.
Maybe a la Breaking Bad.
Sort of Breaking Badish, a little bit more South Central LA.
Well, I'm talking cartel style,
Oh yeah, cartel style. Yeah, the Mexicans. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Talking about
the cousins.
Tortuga's head on,
oh,
on
my
an
goodness.
Actual turtle.
Oh my goodness. All right, so let's do Oscar nominations real quick, and then we're gonna wrap this thing up. Drew, you got the list of Oscar nominations there?
Oscar nominations for 2013?
2013 for the Oscars come out in February 2013.
Where would you like me to start?
Go ahead and start with the best pictures of the year, the eight best pictures.
Right. Nominations for the year 2013 best picture are Amour, The Life of Pi,
right.
Argo,
right.
Lincoln,
cool.
Beasts of the Southern Wild,
good.
Silver Linings Playbook,
That's
Django Unchained,
nice.
And Zero Dark Thirty,
nice.
And Les Miserables,
all of them good movies. Like Les Mis, Silver Linings Playbook. I don't think
Silver Linings.
It's good. I mean, it didn't make my top 15, but. For a romantic comedy, it's great. It's a David O. Russell movie.
I love David O. Russell.
He got some accolades with The Fighter a couple years ago here.
Yeah,
and again,
really
with Silver Linings Playbook, he's getting some love. But what's important is compared to that list, what are the top five? What are the five directors, best directors? Because this is going to help us narrow down who's going to win Best Picture.
Directors.
Because we have eight Best Picture nominations, but there's only five slots for directors.
All right, so for directing, we have Michael Haneke for Amour.
Okay, that's surprising.
Ben Zeitlin for Beasts of the Southern Wild.
That's also very surprising.
Ang Lee for The Life of Pi.
Not surprising at all.
Steven Spielberg for Lincoln.
Uh-huh.
And David O. Russell for
Silver
Linings Playbook.
Silver Linings Playbook, there you go. So you can already eliminate a bunch of movies for winning Best Picture because... Generally, they also have to be nominated for Best Director. So that means, unfortunately, movies like
Zero Dark Thirty,
Django Unchained. I think those are three.
Argo.
And Argo. So there are nine movies nominated. Not eight. Nine movies.
Yeah.
So those four, then, they're most likely not going to win. What are the best actors?
2013 Oscar nominations for actor in a leading role.
Yep.
Bradley Cooper for Silver Linings Playbook.
Okay.
Joaquin Phoenix for The Master.
Incredible performance.
Daniel Day-Lewis for Lincoln.
That's the winner.
Denzel Washington for Flight.
Great performance.
Hugh Jackman for Les Miserables.
He did good. He's good. Like you said, he's a song and dance guy. He's great at singing. All the acting required by that role.
Yeah, but if Daniel Day-Lewis is
as Lincoln,
nominated, it's over.
It's done.
It's over. He wins, no matter what.
He wins. I would love to see Joaquin Phoenix win, because like
it's
I said, he's insane. Who knows what he would do?
So what if he's crazy? It doesn't matter. If he's crazy,
it's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Daniel Day-Lewis can act crazier than he actually is.
It's all about Daniel Day-Lewis. Best Actress.
Best Actress in leading role. We have Jessica Chastain for Zero Dark Thirty.
Yep.
Quavenge Wallace for Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Nice pronunciation.
Jennifer Lawrence, Silver Linings Playbook.
Good job.
Naomi Watts, The Impossible.
No one saw that.
Emmanuel Riva, Amour.
Amour. That one's going to go either to Riva or Chastain. Although maybe Wallace. That one's up in the air.
That little girl, you know.
And she's great in it. She's fantastic.
A little black girl.
Youngest nominee ever. 6 years old when she made the movie.
About what happened in Hurricane Katrina.
Sort of, you know,
it's
parallel.
Almost guaranteed.
I'd say she's,
She has a really good chance.
She has a very good chance. Chastain's amazing, though, in Zero Dark Thirty. And apparently Emmanuel Riva, she plays a dying woman. So, I mean, how can the Academy not like that? The Academy's all old people. All right, give me best cinematography. I'm trying to narrow down who's going to win here because I'm adding up nominations. Here we go.
All right, best cinematography.
Yep.
We have Anna Karenina for
Anna Karenina.
Seamus McCarvey for Anna Karenina.
Okay.
We have Robert Richardson for Django Unchained.
Yes.
Claudio Miranda, Life of Pi.
Okay.
Janis Kaminski, Lincoln.
Uh-huh.
Roger Deakins, Skyfall.
That's interesting that they gave some love to the Skyfall. It's a shame that there's no 70mm love there for The Master or The Dark Knight Rises. I guess the Academy hates large format filmmaking. You said Janis Kaminski for Lincoln? All right, I'm thinking Lincoln so far because we got Daniel Day-Lewis nominated for, because you have to have certain categories to be nominated to win. So far we got Best Actor. We got cinematography. Is Lincoln nominated for best editing? And give me, look, all right, first tell me, is Lincoln nominated for editing?
Yes.
And is Lincoln nominated for screenplay, adapted screenplay? Do you see it there?
Yeah, it's working.
Screenplay, there's adapted screenplay and original screenplay.
Yes.
All right. We're putting some pieces together here. Silver Linings Playbook, is that nominated for screenplay and editing?
Because
Life of Pi is not nominated for any acting.
Silver Linings Playbook is for adapted screenplay.
Okay, and editing.
Editing, got to get back to the top of this list.
The editing one is surprisingly key.
Film editing, yes.
All right, so I would put those as your top two choices right now for possible... The movie to just like take it all, just because you have to have certain things: the acting, best director, best picture, editing, and cinematography. All those things have to be in line. There's a couple more too that I think are essential, but it's going to be between Lincoln and really Lincoln and Silver Linings Playbook. Older audience. Who do you think is going to win out? It's going to be Lincoln. You know, I mean, the older people are going to be going for...
Lincoln, definitely.
As opposed to the movie about the two crazy, beautiful people falling in love and dancing.
Yeah.
All right, well, hey, that's going to be interesting. We'll have more definitive... we'll probably do a whole pool, maybe. We'll both guess who's going to win each category, and we'll announce that the week before the actual Oscars, and then we'll add it up after the Oscars. We'll see how we do.
All right.
Although Oscars are on a Sunday night. We might have to... Might have to do that a week late.
Yeah, maybe.
Because we record this on Sunday nights, air it on Monday. So that brings us to the end. That's the end of the Crespo Dome, the end of the show for this week. Thanks for tuning in to the first episode. Remember, you can get us at cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. Twitter, we're at CrespoDiso. Drew is at AntiHero419. I'm at Movie Examiner. Facebook.com/CinemaCrespoDiso. Instagram.com/CinemaCrespoDiso. Inquire about the street team. You can get on it, get some free stuff, learn about things before everyone else. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. I'd like to thank certain people real quick for helping to make this happen, because this is an effort of many people. Executive producer Abigail Santiago, many contributors like Matthew Johnston, Mildred Santiago, Blanca Santiago, good buddy SBK. He's come through a lot with a lot of the stuff with the software and helping me get up and running. I got my IT man Ed Lovables, Ed Shuffles. He's putting together the website for us. That thing's gonna be pretty sweet. We'll be debuting that very soon. So thank you to all these people. Thank you, Drew. You have a good time? This was your first episode.
Oh, I had a fantastic time. It was a lot less nerve-wracking than I thought.
Right.
And it just kind of felt like you and me just kind of sitting there talking to each other.
Yeah, it's funny how that works out. Drinking beers.
Yeah.
Funny how that is.
Just kind of hanging.
Wow. It's strange, isn't it?
Yeah. It felt surprisingly natural.
This was a pretty long one. We're looking at about roughly a little over an hour and a half.
Awesome.
So I don't know if it's going to be this long every week. We had a lot to talk about. We got a little lost in the best of 2012.
Probably.
But we did review an entire year for you people. You're welcome.
In 90 minutes.
So, hey, come on. This is free. So, thanks a lot. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys. Talk to you soon.